Our next session is by Ming Nguyen, and he's going to be talking about Journey to the Center of the Planet. Please welcome Nguyen.
Magandang hapon. My name is Ming. Maybe you noticed that the session has a Jules Verne theme. So here's Snæfells Jökull, the setting of Journey to the Center of the Earth. I thought it would be a good fitting metaphor for this talk about exploring OSM's core software infrastructure. And also, this conference has taken me on my first trip to Asia, a journey much farther from home than I've ever gone before. So some of you may know my name from everyday OSM napping discussions, racking up emoji reactions on the forum. And that's great, but that's not really what I'm here for today. So for the last several months, I've been working for the OSMF as their core software development facilitator. It's a title so long and haughty that it falls right off the end of my business card. But that's okay. The job isn't really about me. It's about making sure our core software projects are able to develop sustainably with more resources and better relationships than before. So this is the first of its kind role. So I understand that there's some confusion about what it is I do. And for one thing, what is core software? I've got a bit of a long-winded explanation, so please bear with me. Eons and eons ago, I volunteered to redesign the website of a rural nonprofit organization. They asked me to stop by their office one day to chat about, it was a double wide trailer just in this rural area to chat about what I wanted to do with their site. And so I came armed with ideas about a content management system, CSS3, Ajax, image carousels with light boxes, a little bit of Perl. It was going to be awesome. So on the way out, the secretary stopped me and asked me in the sweetest possible manner, "Can you just explain to me how the internet works? Like, I click this button out in Outlook to send my email and it flies out to outer space and then what?" Okay, don't laugh. That's exactly how most of us mappers feel about map technology. You map the thing, you click upload, whatever you mapped gets uploaded to the cloud, to outer space, wherever. And before long, hopefully you can see that, you can search for it and see it on the map after reloading a bunch of times. So most of us only know map technology from these two ends of the pipeline, the input and the output. And everything else is sort of a mystery. This was me for my first several years in OSM, and even after I went to work for Mapbox on OSM-based software, I still felt like I was burning the candle at both ends, working my way towards the middle of the software stack. Well, that's a very linear way of looking at it, but the reality is always more complex. So this is the diagram that Harry Wood and Tigerfell made a couple years ago of all the different components in the traditional OSM software stack. I'd probably make a slightly different diagram just based on what I'd spend my time on. But the point is that there's a lot of interconnected moving parts that a lot of times you don't really think about because they just work. The component that you're probably most familiar with is OpenStreetMap website, AKA the Rails port. It's a Ruby on Rails application that handles everything from serving up the homepage to accepting uploads and notes and GPS traces via the REST API, to letting you comment on change sets and diary entries. Unfortunately, an object-oriented Ruby on Rails application is going to be pretty slow at processing the huge volumes of data that certain REST API calls allow. And so that's where a second project comes in, OpenStreetMap CGI Map. So this project re-implements some key API calls in high-performance C++. And these projects march in lockstep. So every time we implement a new API call in Rails, we often have to re-implement it in C++ in order for anyone to be able to use it to benefit from the improvement. So what the Rails port and the CGI map put into the database is a far cry from what OSM publishes for data consumers. So like no renderer, geocoder, or router would go one by one, hammering the REST API once per element to get all the data they need. So instead, they get the data in bulk in the form of a database dump of the whole planet or a planet dump. And that, for those who don't know, is a compressed XML format that contains all the relevant portions of the OSM database layout. So there's a lot of different portions that don't make it in there, like for privacy reasons and whatnot. There's also an obscure project, Planet Dump NG, so that's responsible for creating this planet dump. And the process takes currently takes nearly a week. We're looking at shortening that. So data consumers who need more frequent updates, they will consume minutely diffs atop the latest planet dump. And that is that's the responsibility of another set of scripts, another project. So all of these projects have they work for a long time. They've been around, and they all have known technical debt or things that we would improve if we had unlimited time and resources. I mean, like any project, commercial, proprietary, open source, we always have this long wish list, right? So we don't have unlimited time and resources, at least not in OSMF. And so thanks to the Sovereign Tech Agency, we are able to support the core software projects in some new ways this year, befitting our organizational mission to support OSM. You've heard a lot about sustainability and resilience at this conference. So what we're doing here is we're focusing on the resilience of the infrastructure that enables all of you to improve the resilience of real-world communities. So far, the most visible impact of this investment has been something like my monthly summaries of the changes to the website software. So it's kind of a small thing. Now you, as an ordinary user of the software, can understand the changes that are happening to your precious workflows over time, without having to find out by surprise and guess as to the reasons why things are changing. We also just hired our core software engineer, Pablo, to complement our volunteers' efforts. You'll be hearing a lot more about you'll be seeing a lot more of his work going forward now that he's joined. And behind the scenes, I've also been focused on getting people to talk to each other, to find out about each other's needs and visions for the projects. And you know, there's in any organization, there's always kind of like these missing links, right? And so I'm focused on getting people to just fill those gaps. And then we're also putting together a roadmap for the core software projects over the next 12 to 18 months. So this is based on numerous public and private conversations that about the project's needs, and these are still ongoing. The roadmap will focus on these four areas, and not on this area. There's community dynamics, operational sustainability, developer experience, and legal compliance. These are big words, but I mean, I think for most of the community members here, I think the community dynamics part will be probably the most interesting. I don't really have the details on this slide, but think of this as a shared statement of intent. Like the point of this roadmap is, based on what we know so far, what do we want to kind of shoot for in the next 12 to 18 months? And I'll give prospective contributors to these projects an idea of what the project considers to be a priority ahead of time, right? So like, this has buy-in from the maintainers. So you don't have to sort of negotiate things on the fly. And so that way, people don't have to feel like they have to sink time into contributions that may get rejected. And so that's a bit of a bummer whenever that happens. So I hope to share this roadmap with the broader OSM community in the next week or so. I wasn't able to for this conference, some GitHub repo setting, security settings, but I'll share it in due time. And I think this will be the start of many conversations, certainly not the end of the story. I know the moment you share a roadmap, everyone's got, well, what about this whole wish list, right? Well, let's talk about that. So I want to kind of take a step back and think about, so like, I don't know how many of you are coders in this room or online, but I want to leave you with some tips for kind of interacting with the software projects, because and this kind of applies not just in our core software projects, but I think overall in a lot of open source projects, because I see a lot of people who kind of like run into a lot of friction because of maybe how they kind of take their first steps into the project. And so the first thing I'd advise is, if in doubt, ask. I think some people kind of run headlong into a solution for what they perceive to be a need in the project. But the way you should really kind of approach this is, if you're new to the project, come and understand it first. Come and understand what the priorities are and kind of the mode of interacting with the maintainers. Because everyone has sort of their own the different way of working. And sometimes a lot of things aren't quite written down. I feel that's one of the things I'm trying to work on, like to get more things written down so that there's a little more predictability. But you know, sometimes you come to a project with an idea, and the answer will be no. And that's, don't take that personally, right? Maintainers in open source projects are responsible for kind of steering the ship, making sure that the project goes in a straight line without too many distractions, because there's a lot of the unglamorous stuff that maybe people won't just come out of the woodwork to contribute, but still needs to get done. So if you hear no, don't take that as a final answer, but kind of do some introspection, see if maybe that's because you haven't explained it well, you know, what your solution is well enough, or maybe the problem isn't well articulated, or maybe it just needs to be sort of a negotiation, right? To see what can the project take in at this given time, you know, given all the other things that are going on. And the last thing is kind of a small thing, but it comes up all the time. Don't ask to be, just don't comment on an issue. Just ask, can you please assign this to me? A lot of open source projects really don't use that feature in GitHub, but it's there, and I know that comes up a lot as a source of friction. So for those of you who don't consider yourselves to be coders, I mean, it's never too late to start, but I would also encourage you to try like other ways of contributing. So one on-ramp that you can consider is translation. I know there's a lot of languages here in the Philippines, and not all of them have really good language coverage in OpenStreetMap, both in the database, but also in our core software projects. So there's a number of different platforms. Every project is on kind of a different translation platform, but the website itself is on translatewiki.net. It's an open project. You sign up, you go through a couple of steps to kind of become trusted, and then you can contribute what you know in the language that you know. And this is kind of how I started in some of these projects, just kind of getting to know the project more deeply because of this little corner of the code base that happens to be very visible to a lot of users. And you know, these translation management systems are great. They provide a lot of tools for you as a translator. You know, you don't have to work from scratch a lot of times. Depending on the language, there might be machine translation tools that are integrated to give you suggestions that you can accept, reject, tweak, often tweak. And it'd be even better than machine translation, there's translation memory. So you can kind of like, I translated this for a different project a long time ago. This is the same thing, right? So there's a lot of different tools. There's a whole community around this this kind of stuff. So that's another option for those who aren't right there, you know, like ready to do to dive into C++ or Ruby on Rails and stuff like that. And I mean, this is all I have for the prepared presentation. So salamat. Thank you for taking the time to you know after. After lunch and everything to come to this talk. I do have an email address. You can email anytime if you have any questions about how to get started. My door is always open. I'm always happy to help people get a foothold, whether it's in the most obvious way or not. I think we might have time for questions.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, thank you.
All right, so like you had said, that if you have any doubts, you ask, right? So this is the time for question and answer. So if you have any question, please just raise your hand. Okay.
Hi.
Hi.
Peter. So what's the most spectacular volunteer contribution on the source code side have you received yet?
So I've only been on the job since April, I have to say the most spectacular thing that's happened is we finally launched vector tiles on the homepage. that's a long time coming. Yeah, I know a lot of people have been waiting for that to happen. I mean, it's not going to solve all the world's problems, right? But it's a big milestone, and it shows that we can accomplish these things. It opens the door to hopefully a lot of other improvements in the future.
Aside from software development projects, are there actually data science projects that the OSM Foundation is working on, or are they more focused on the software part as of now?
Yeah, so like there's the core software projects that I focus on for OSM, for OSMF, and then there's like the broader ecosystem. I'd say within the core of what OSM is doing, there's not so much in the data science realm. However, you know, there's like just outside that that bubble, there are a number of tools, including the one you'll hear about next in the next talk, that are very are going to be very useful for data scientists. Yeah.
Any other question?
This one over here on this side.
Why should people?
Oh, a question is why should people help the foundation? You know what? It's not for the foundation, right? The foundation is here to support OSM. So why help the foundation? To help OSM. You know, I think we all care very much, very deeply about this project, about this community, and you know, the efforts we're doing here are really about making sure that the various software projects, the efforts of the foundation are living up to the community's needs. So I hope that. I hope that it's a bit of optimism. I really do think that everybody who's involved has the community's best interests at heart. You know, just it's a raucous environment sometimes, but that's OSM, right? Yeah, one more question. Yeah.
Let's say one day you're just as successful as Google, but you're gonna need a superpower website to handle all that traffic.
Oh yeah, if we're just successful at Google, I don't know if we have done something wrong. that gets into the question of what the website is for, right? There's always been discussions about what the website is for, but I think the conservative answer that I'm taking for at least as part of this road mapping effort is, let's focus on what the website is, the audience of the website is most focused on right now, which is the mapping community, and also, you know, not just mapping per se, but also you know, the phrase is eating one's dog food, right? I mean, I think every mapper wants to experience the map to some extent, and so that's where we're focusing, just, you know, kind of like serving the OSM project's needs in terms of day-to-day usage, and to some extent, it'll work itself out because it'll help with like what you know, kind of consumer-facing needs or whatever. We're not going to really address that the way that Google does, but we will sort of hopefully address the end-user needs well enough to bring more people into the fold as contributors. And if we manage to have a big chunk of the population coming out as contributors, I think a lot of other problems will solve themselves for us.
Well, thank you. Any other questions?
Any online?
I was wondering, are there maybe any plans or ideas to bring more tools or parts of the OSM ecosystem under the umbrella of the OpenStreetMap Foundation in the near future?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's an interesting question, right? So you're talking about actually formally bringing more tools into the purview of OSMF. That's a delicate question because really, you know, OSMF is trying to support projects rather than kind of exercise control over them, and so if projects come to OSMF seeking more support, that's a discussion we can have. But I think as things stand, a lot of times what projects are looking for is kind of the more mundane stuff, right? Like, how do I kind of fit in with the community in a certain way? And one of the things in these discussions I'm hearing is that the website could be integrating with other tools in certain ways. And so like that's an option that doesn't have to necessarily go towards kind of a governance change, if that makes sense.
Okay, thank you. Is there any more questions? Because we have like 5 more minutes of questions, so you can ask him anything you want to ask now.
Out of curiosity, what are the problems that you will not solve for OSM?
That I will not solve?
that you will not solve.
Yeah, so a big one that came up during some of these programming discussions is the data model. Some of you may know that there have been discussions around changing the data model for OSM for a long time. Things like adding a first class area type, or changing the API in various ways. And I think the rough consensus that I'm hearing is that in a time frame of 12 to 18 months, especially with the kind of the level of funding that we have, we're not really going to try to rock the boat to that extent. But one thing that we will be doing, just to, as a matter of course, is to better understand how what the developer ecosystem looks like, so that if in the future we do take steps like maybe we might have to for various reasons, that we kind of know how we can limit the fallout to coordinate better with the developer community. Because it goes back to what I was saying earlier, right? Communication is a big part of this, and we historically haven't had a whole lot of communication with kind of the broader development community to know exactly how our changes are impacting them. So that's something that we will be kind of trying to be more deliberate about. But yeah, I guess if you're hoping this is the talk about API v7, sorry.
All right, thank you.
All right, thank you. All right. One final question.
Is there any concern about capacity of serving vector tiles? More and more services are coming to OSM, and many of them are just downloading standard issue Carto tiles. For example, rail services. I can see it on the map where the tiles were downloaded. Hit points are along the rails. How you address this?
Yeah. Yeah, some of you may know recently there was kind of an attempt to enforce we actually have a tile usage policy that has various requirements for if you want to use the OSMF provided tiles. And there was an attempt to enforce some aspects of that more strictly recently, and it kind of like didn't quite work out the first attempt. There are measures in place to kind of prevent overuse. But it's always a bit of a cat and mouse game. I mean, I think this goes just in general on the internet, right? There's always going to be people kind of overusing, and you have to kind of like chase after them. For scrapers, we have been dealing with that. I don't think this is really so much about vector tiles so much. So far, the main kind of issues have arisen more about raster tiles because those are more popular. The vector tiles are still pretty new. And so I think we're still in the stage of trying to raise awareness, honestly, of those vector tiles. But you know, the day will come, and we'll have to see then. We're trying to be vigilant. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yep. Thank you, everyone.